Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Saturn Vox podcast, where discussions of philosophy meet the liminal space we weave in dreams. This is your favorite contemplator of paradox and devotee to the Dark Mother, Mikala Ann. On this week's episode, we have musician, printmaker, liminal beauty, and Marian devotee, Ramona Martinez, creator of the Visions of Mary Oracle Deck. Have you ever had one of those experiences where you meet a new friend and can't help but become immediately comfortable? This was certainly the experience Ramona and I had as we sat down with some tea to discuss the various faces of the mothers Mary and Hecate. This episode unfolds more like sisters, hiding under bed covers at night, sharing secrets, than my standard interview style. But that seemed appropriate in the end, considering our conversation. Join us as we discuss working with and getting to know the mother archetype in all her paradoxical facets, from the perspective of two of the most well-known spirits who claim that name. In what ways do Mary and Hecate differ? In what ways are they the same? How does the mother present herself to us in ways of both darkness and light? Ramona and I share a bit of our personal practice with these spirits and even talk a little bit about channeling. There's an appearance from Ramona's Sphinx Cat as well, so don't miss out. All this and more in today's episode of Saturn Vox.
Mikala, thanks so much for having me on Saturn Vox. Let's see. Yeah, so I am most of the time doing linocut printmaking. And if you don't know what that is, basically it's like the process of making a stamp out of rubber that you then ink and then print as an image. And for about the past two or three years, I would say, I sort of found my voice in making Catholic iconography, both of saints, but also of the Virgin Mary, who's a big artistic and spiritual interest of mine.
So you were raised Catholic then, or?
So my dad is Catholic from Texas, and he was like, my kids are never going to be raised Catholic. So we were actually baptized in like Church of England, and I went to Episcopalian church growing up. So I feel really fortunate for that because I felt like I was exposed to my dad's like Catholic culture without actually having to go to Catholic church, which like a lot of my Catholic friends or folk Catholic friends like have a lot of religious trauma, you know? And so I feel kind of free to go into Catholic, I don't know how to describe it, like the mythological framework of Catholicism without the baggage. And so that's really nice. It makes it much easier to connect without feeling like I'm not worthy, this kind of thing that can come with that.
Yeah, definitely. As a person that went to Catholic school up until the first year of high school, there's definitely a lot of undoing guilt baggage specifically that comes from leaving a religion like that. But I guess what I'm most captivated in is the one thing that I feel like Catholicism has going for it, in terms of like if I would have to compare Catholicism to other Christian denominations, is that Catholicism is kind of the one that embraces the Virgin Mary. Like Mary was a large part of my upbringing. My grandmother gave her rosary to my mom. My mom collected rosaries when my mom died. It was like one of the few things that I got was like her bag of rosaries. So it's just,
Where did you fall into that aspect of the Catholic mythos when you were kind of raised in an environment that would have been very against that kind of iconography?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I didn't know about the Virgin Mary really at all growing up beyond seeing her in nativity plays and being like, oh, I want to be her. Like, I don't know if anyone else felt that way, but I was always like, you know, trying to like put myself in her shoes. And when they would sing carols about her, I would like, it felt like a, this sounds kind of ridiculous to say, but it felt like in a way they were singing about me. And I just felt like this closeness to her and always had. And really like the step towards knowing her in a real way happened when I was an adult. I decided to teach myself to draw at age 22. I had no previous art experience at all. So, when you just start out as an artist, it's hard to think of what to draw. And so you kind of like grasp at like representational things, blah, blah, blah. But I grew up with a Mexican dad knowing who the Virgin of Guadalupe is or was, and like seeing her image and other like Mexican Catholic iconography. And so I just sort of like drew her over and over again. And then when I started to do printmaking, when I was like 27, I guess, that was an image that I did a lot too. And fast forward to present day, I'm working on an oracle deck of all hand-carved Virgin Mary icons. And the idea and the reason I love to work with Mary is because I feel like if you like just know her sort of superficially, she can appear as being like this perfect, untouchable, you know, virgin that is like hard to relate to. But in actuality, she has so many dimensions, and her character, I guess, in the Bible is so radical in so many ways, and so brave, and so close to suffering in the darkest, hardest parts of the human experience, that like she provides so many different the deck is called Visions of Mary, so like different visions of the idea of the mother and all of the functions of that role, and that how we can learn from those, I guess. So,
oh, first of all, while you were talking, I got goosebumps. I feel like for me, as a person who had an extreme amount of religious trauma, and I really did turn my back on all of Judeo, Christian, Islamic, anything that had to do with that mythology at all. I didn't want anything to do with it for about a good decade. And it was actually Mary who I kept falling into again. And it's the reason why I bring that up is because I've actually read this in a good number of different books about Mary, or just in people's Instagram posts who are like, I'm not really that religious, but I can't turn away from this spirit, Mary, the mother. I think Christianity or Catholicism in general did her a real disservice when they kind of gave her this crowning of like virgin, even though in some ways that does kind of relate to this, you know, if not that we should be looking at Mary through a Kabbalistic lens, but there is this like creatrix, the dark camel, the high priestess archetype that's like the hidden feminine, which is unknowable. So, and that I think the Catholic Virgin Mary can represent, you know, Artemis type womanhood or Diana type womanhood. But realistically, like the Jewish Mary, the actual person that probably was literally just a 13-year-old, poor, oppressed girl. And there is something of that story of the innate oppression that all assigned female at birth peoples have to deal with is like embedded in her story as well. Not just the suffering of being a mother and watching her son die, but the things that the Catholic Church tried to wash away, like her ostracization from the community for getting pregnant and it not having been her husband, or like, you know, what it must have been like to be a 13-year-old raising a child.
Yeah. I think about her strength all the time, and it's such a huge, it's just such a thing that I grab onto over and over again. And also too, like, her, I don't want to say like omnipotence, it's like omnipresence. And that's something that I really love specifically about the apparition of the Virgin of Guadalupe, is she tells you, even in moments where you feel like it's too far gone, or you don't have anyone to turn to, she's always there, you know? And I just, as someone who grew up without always having someone to turn to, that just brings my heart so much comfort, you know?
Yeah, that actually reminds me. So Ramona and I actually met in Jack Grail's Hecate class, Walking the Forked Path, I think is what it's officially called. And there is some like crossover between the two deities, I would say. And that aspect of like someone who's always there, someone who's always there to comfort, someone who especially wants to comfort those who are the outcast or who feel motherless. I feel like both Mary and Hecate respond to that same call.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I also think too, like, well, I want to like quickly say that when I joined the class, it was in part, and before that, when I started to seek out Hecate personally, it was because I felt like, oh, I'm not getting like the dark mother enough from Mary. Like I didn't really, it's hard for me to think of her as like a scary spirit. Like I have no fear with Mary at all, you know? But Hecate to me was this like chaotic, unpredictable force, you know? And so I was like, oh, I just don't feel like I'm in touch with my shadow enough. And so I need to like seek out Hecate. And before I took the class, I actually had just finished a 9-week crossroads ritual, which for those of you who don't know, it's a common spell in like Southern folk magic, hoodoo practices, but basically you go to a crossroads at the same time for 9 weeks in a row. And the idea is that the spirit of the crossroads will grant you a boon, basically something that you ask for, and it can be anything. So I went initially like wanting to learn how to be a medium and speak to the dead. And I decided that rather than working with an unknown spirit of the crossroads, I would invoke Hecate and ask her to like come into my life and help me with this goal. And so I did this whole thing. And actually when I went, I would sit there, because you're supposed to sit there and spend like a time just like waiting to see if like any spirits come, basically.
Is it every day or just once a week?
I went every Sunday for 9 weeks at 4 a.m.
I like this commitment. This is great.
I know. It was the most committed I've ever been to any spell work, for sure. Anyway, so yeah, I would go and I'd sit there and pray my rosary, and then I would recite 5 or 6 lines from the prayer to Hecate Selene from the PGM. So by the end of the 9 weeks, I recited all 105 lines or so, 125 lines. And I would leave offerings of like garlic and different things that she's supposed to like. And instead of asking her to like help me speak to dead people, I decided to just ask her to like accept me as a devotee and protect me. And then I ended up taking the class. So yeah, that was like a long story to the run up.
No, that's beautiful. I love when it lines up like that. Did you already know about the class, or did it like pop up on your newsfeed or just pop up on your radar randomly?
Yeah, I had heard Jack Grail's like glitch bottle episodes on Hecate, which is how I heard about the prayer to Hecate Selene and all that. And then I noticed somehow that like the next class of Hail Hecate is coming up now. And I was like, oh, well, it's literally a week after I finished the spell. So it felt like kismet for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I'd agree.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, like, just going back to what you said about the Dark Mother and sort of like figuring out that, well, I guess what we wanted to talk about and what I was so excited to talk to you about was that it turns out that Hecate has elements that are just as light and beautiful and young and virginal as the Virgin Mary. And the Virgin Mary has aspects to her that are just as dark and scary and even vengeful as Hecate can be. So
So was there a moment, like, were you meditating or were you listening to one of the lectures or was it a dream? Like, because I'm especially wondering where you got the insight into the Virgin when you, because it makes sense to me, like, where you got the insight into Hecate, because that's what we were learning in the class. Where did you find it extended into, oh, wow, maybe these deities have more in common than I anticipated?
Yeah, so two things. One, I have many good friends on Instagram who are folk Catholic practitioners and very into Mary and into all of her different sort of incarnations or apparitions or forms, right? And so one in particular that my friend W, who runs the St. Anthony's Tongue podcast, has been working with is Our Lady of Sorrows.
That's the one I work with.
Oh, perfect. That's amazing. So if y'all haven't seen her image, it is a Mary who is very bereft, sometimes crying, and has seven swords pierced in her heart, which represent the seven sorrows of the Mother Mary, extending from the prophecy that her son would die, or like that she'd have a sword in her heart and losing the child Jesus, and then also all the things from the crucifixion. Anyway, so that Mary. And you can kind of, much like with the different versions of Hecate that you can call on to come and help you, Hecate has a version of her that's mother, but then she also has a version of her that's just like anger, rage, Hecate, you know, and all these have different Greek names. Much in the same way, the Virgin Mary has different versions or incarnations or aspects of her that are all a part of a whole, but you can call on individually to help intercede for you. So Our Lady of Sorrows is like scary as fuck. Cause she like has, as Michaela said, like seen her son be murdered at the hands of the state and she's not here to play. Like she's ready to unleash that rage, rip the swords out of her heart and cut you in half.
Like that's like something that I feel like was lost as we moved out of a pagan theological mindset into the more monotheistic religious mindset is even this idea of the feminine got kind of archetyped or like put in this box of like meek, subservient. Yeah, like that Virgin of Mary will actually pull the swords out of her heart and cut whoever is trying to harm her children. She's more like an angry bear. And people have forgotten that those types of energies exist within the feminine because of the way that it has been spun in through church propaganda, I would say.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that even if it's not a part of the official mythos, like that's the really cool part of folk Catholicism, especially in like, for me, I just am thinking of like Mexican indigenous practices like being incorporated, like Our Lady of Guadalupe is said to have a machete but like that's not like part of the official story, but I've heard that enough to know that that's something that people believe and that she's that fierce, you know?
I want that in an icon.
Oh yeah, totally. Oh, and then there's the Zapatista Mary, the like Zapatistas have their own version of her icon, and yeah, she can be a soldier.
So you're kind of hinting then that we have all these different names for Mary, like Our Lady of Lourdes, Our Lady of Sorrows, you know, Our Lady of Guadalupe. These are like epitaphs then, similar to like Primo, oh my gosh, Sarcophagus, or just any of the other various Hecate ones, Endonia, you know. So you're claiming that they're more like epitaphs to call on a specific aspect of her personality.
Yeah, I totally think it works the same way that it does with Hecate. And that actually was one of the coolest parts about memorizing the PGM prayer that I did, is that it was a crash course in all of the different aspects of her. And it's literally, I mean, if you've ever memorized anything like that long and repeat it week after week, it becomes burned into your subconscious. Like, I'm going to be 80 years old being able to recite this PGM, parts of this PGM prayer, like in my delirium. Like,
There are worse things to be able to call upon.
That is so true. That's so true. And actually, you know what? That is the other cool thing, like the parallel that I see between the two, and I think any deity as well, is like the more devotion and prayer that you give them, the more that, I don't know. I mean, I think spirits can intercede and help people even if they don't even believe in them, you know? But I think that if you show a spirit or deity that you really trust them and that you are grateful for that their role in your life and like show them that all the time, the relationship becomes, or like the connection becomes stronger between the two of you, you know?
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of something we learned in Jack Grail's class about the difference between sorcery and theurgy, in that like the sorcerer is kind of trying to like use these manipulative tactics to get the deity to just to trick them into doing what you want, I guess. Whereas the theurgist is dedicating hours of their time and slowly working their way up from working with the daemon, like this deity in its lowest animal form, all the way up to its like intangible fractaline aspect of pure light. And they don't just go straight to the home run. They gradually work their way up because it's a dance between the theurgist and the deity. It's a dance between the theurgist and the spirit, where you guys are kind of building up this crescendo together that, of course, in my mind, the magic becomes stronger because of how much energy the two of you have cultivated with each other before you even say, hey, I would like this, you know. I mean, I do say blanket protection always, please, but otherwise I don't ask for very much.
Yeah, I feel like there's a middle path between the two. At least that's what I've experienced in my practice, because I've definitely, out of the blue, asked saints for things that I've had not much of a relationship and been, like, stunned. And maybe that's all the time I put in on the rosary. That is, like, one of the promises of the rosary, is if you pray it all the time, you have, like, the attention of the heavenly court to, like, help you.
Yeah. Also, if you're super focused on Jesus and putting a lot of love and devotion into Jesus, then the saints would naturally want to help you.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Jesus and I don't know each other that well, which is like a whole.
Oh, cool. Me neither.
Yeah. I want to get to know him better because he's so powerful. I'm actually trying to connect with the baby Jesus more because I'm really into Saint Anthony, and that's his, you know, Jesus friend. Anyway, no, I think Mary, like, is my, oh, and actually Jack Grail, that was the other thing that he said in the course that I loved so much. He did a lesson comparing sort of the similarities between Hecate and Mary, and the saints, he read quote after quote of saints who described her. I wrote some of them down actually, because they're so beautiful.
Oh, yes, please.
So Saint Bernard: no sinner, no matter how great, who has Mary as a protector is ever lost. And because Hecate is literally the space between things, it's like if you're lost in a liminal space, like Mary and Hecate are both there. St. John Fianni: we cannot enter heaven without calling upon the aid of the Blessed Virgin Mary, who is the porter of heaven. So again, the idea of a threshold guardian, someone being there to decide who goes in and out. Although the Virgin Mary lets everybody in. That's the dirty secret. And then one more, Saint Bonaventure: through her, the gate of heaven was opened to us. Through her, we ascend to God. And of course, there are all these other beliefs that I don't think are official canon, but like the idea that Mary is the one who comes to collect our soul after we die. Like she has a psychopomp function of guiding souls into the afterlife, and that she's much like Hecate, a mediatrix, an intercessor, someone who, at least according to the Gnostics and the people who interacted with Hecate from that time, like this ensouling mother energy that wants us to ascend, like spiritually, and is sort of standing always around us as we like go on that journey.
Would you consider Mary to be an Angelos? Like, I'm kind of playing with this idea, like, to what degree is she different or separate from the angelic messengers?
Well, I feel like, didn't we learn that some versions of Hecate are like an Angelos? Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of her incarnations or epithets, right? I feel like it's the same with Mary. Is like, I guess it depends on what you mean by Angelos, like someone delivering messages or like interceding. But I know that Our Lady of Guadalupe is a strong intercessor I hear about all the time. Our Lady of Lourdes can heal. And oh my God, you know what, Michaela? I had a dream about the Virgin Mary two nights ago, like a really intense dream.
Oh shit.
Now that you said Angelos, I almost forgot to tell you about it.
Is it something you can say on the pod?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool.
It wasn't a secret. I have this obsession with her appearing to me because I'm like always thinking about her and I'm like, I'm not humble enough. I'm not like downtrodden enough. Like, it's never going to happen, you know. And also, too, when she appears to people, she always tells them secrets and she's like, don't tell anybody. But that's not what happened. So, weirdly, before I fell asleep, I swear to God, I felt like I heard a choir very faintly. And I like sat up in bed and I was like, what the hell? And that sort of happened a little bit and then I drifted off. And in this dream, I was in a bedroom. It looked like my room, but it wasn't my room, but it looked like I could have decorated it. There was a dresser with all these saint statues on it. And in the dream, in my ears, I heard like a drone sound, like an A. And it was like my ears started to like vibrate almost because the sound was like so intense. And in the dream, like my perspective went from like first person shooter to like third person shooter. And I could see myself, but I couldn't see her, but I knew that she was there. So I just saw myself like praying and like in awe of her. And she said, I love you so much, Ramona.
That's so beautiful.
I know. That's what she said. And then the sound started to fade and she was like leaving. And I said, please don't go. Please don't go. You remind me of my parents. You remind me of my grandparents. Please don't go. And then she was gone.
It's like interesting psychopompic as well as the Angelos, because your ancestors were present as well. Like, she carried their essence with her.
That is a big reason why I have gone back to this faith, is because of the ancestral tie. And my grandfather's name, Guadalupe, my great grandmother who raised my dad prayed the rosary every day. And so I really do feel like, oh, and now I pray the rosary every day with my dad.
Oh my God.
So yeah.
That's touching. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely an ancestor thing for me. And I mean, like, yeah, like, I don't really, like, you said you want to get to know Jesus. I really don't. Like, I'm good. I'm good on that. What I really want is Mary alone. And that, I think it is because, well, like, my dad's ancestry is Jewish, so it's, like, not Christian in any way.
Right.
But then my mom, it's from my mom that I have all of these rosaries. Like, it's, and I remember her praying the rosary at night, and I remember my grandma praying the rosary at night. And there is just something about, I feel that in my bones. It's like Mary reminds me of my matrilineal line. And if I were to remove her from my spirit court, it would be like saying a big F you to my ancestors. Like, that's how I feel. It's like, totally. She has to be present, and almost like, I don't know, I don't want to say that I view her and Hecate as the same by any means, but sometimes it does feel like a similar channel. Like, I could accidentally call one and get the other without really meaning to.
I completely 100% agree, and it's something that I think about a lot because, I mean, even though I work mostly within like the angelic realm or whatever, or like the heavenly realm in terms of who I work with, like the reason that I work with Hecate or like any other deity is like, I think that anything that people believe in and have for a long time has power, you know? And like the sorcerers in the PGM knew that too, which is why they called on every god deity like available, because they knew it worked.
It's a good way to go about it, honestly.
Yeah. So for one thing, I don't think there's anything wrong with like having a mix that even if it doesn't seem to make sense. Because I think ultimately I agree with you that Hecate and Mary are just two different faces of the same mother energy that like is, I don't want to say international because that sounds so weird, but you know.
No, I know. I like wrestle with this. Like, is it different? Does the archetype wear different masks that it presents to us because of like just comfortable, like how we're comfortable viewing it? Because, like, I've dreamed about Hecate, but I've never dreamed about Mary. But then I have had Mary's statue, like, that was the first altar I set up. So it's, like, this weird, weird thing where they're not the same. I don't want to make that claim, but then at the same time, I do want to make that claim. And I'm, like, maybe it is just about masking is weird too, because it's like, do you become what you put your mask on, or is the mask the container that the energy fills? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the mask analogy doesn't work exactly because it's like the incarnations or epithets of Mary or Hecate, they are like fully, you know, Our Lady of Lourdes. It is fully, there's no like mask part about it. It's like that's their whole. I see what you're trying to say though about like the changeability and like how can we hold that they are all these things and yet very specifically one thing at a time. And it's like, just like anything else, Mikal, it's like the whole universe is paradox. That's just like the answer to everything.
You have no idea how happy you just made me by saying that. Everybody embrace paradox. It's the only way. It's the only way.
It's true. I mean, there's like these unsolvable riddles. I can't tell you how many times a week I think about free will and fate. Every hour of the day. And it's like, it doesn't really matter because both are true, you know? It's like, there's a fate we cannot escape, but also we can make small changes that maybe, and then also magic, which is why I don't fucking fuck with that shit very often, because I don't know what I'm going to set off, what kind of domino effect. I just would rather pray and leave it in God's hands and like occasionally ask a saint to help me out.
Okay. You know, so. Yeah. I mean, this is another good ethical question that I feel like I had to grapple with in Jack Grell's class. Maybe it does because both you and I are like pretty religiously inclined magicians, whatever that means. But I definitely still maintain a lot of my, you know, the ethics that I was taught growing up. Is hard to undo, and there are certainly some things that I think are unnecessary or wrong, obviously, and other things that I think would actually be the way we should treat other people if the world could just, like, get on board with that sort of stuff. So in Jack's class, when we were doing things like, for example, using the PGM spell for the gladiator heroes and, like, upsetting the dead and then sicking them on someone. And that was hard for me because on some level I was like, you know, there are definitely people in my life who I feel like I deserve justice and that they deserve to have the just hand of God, you know, come in and say, stop treating people this way. You know, like, not, I don't want any real harm to come to them, but, like, I do see the wisdom in, you know, an angry God. I do. I see the wisdom in that. I don't think love and light is the only way that God could be for things to be, you know, for reality to work. But is it ethical of me to, like, involve restless dead in that, or aren't I supposed to be praying for their, you know, release from purgatory? And now I'm kind of like using the fact that they're in purgatory to get what I want. And
yeah,
I'm not saying I didn't use that spell. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. I'm just saying I think it was hard as a person who grew up religious to even consider that kind of stuff at all.
Totally. I totally agree. And I mean, whenever we learned a spell in that class that like showed us just how hardcore late antiquity magicians were, you know, because like I always tried, like I always thought to myself during that, like, okay, these people were paid. They had clients who came to them and said, like, I want this person fucking dead. And you'd be like, okay, that'll be $50, you know, or whatever. And you had to make it work. And it's like, I think about how many spells they must have done all the time. And if you're like operating at that like rate of spell casting, you probably don't have like a lot of like devotional cachet to pull from. I mean, maybe you do, but I have a feeling they got like backlogged and had to just like threaten spirits all the time to get what they wanted. You know, because they're like, I know I asked you to kill this guy yesterday, but like, if you don't do it, like, I'm never going to pray to you again. And everyone's going to like,
you better watch out or I'll say the vowels backwards. Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
There's like a part of me that loves that. I think the rebellious Catholic schoolgirl is like, yeah, take that, God. But then the other part of me is like, oh, we don't threaten God in this house.
Yeah, and there are some people, I think, in the class who, like, took it too far and got, like, you know, slapbacks. I think someone mentioned they threatened her with the hypercosmic God, and then she ruined their life for a good month or so. So, yeah, I don't know. I agree. What do they say? Like, honey is better than vinegar?
To attract flies, though. That's what they say.
Oh. Well, that's not what I wanted to go for.
I intentionally don't make colloquialisms because I smush them together and I'll invent my own colloquialism and people are like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, I feel like I do that too. I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, I totally agree about like the mushy ethics and I also do think, like, I was really grateful to learn about that kind of magic, like, in case there was some kind of emergency situation. I mean, you never know. It's always good to, like, have all of those tools at your disposal, even if you don't think you could ever do it. Maybe there would be a day when you'd need to.
I just wonder sometimes, like, because for me, the way that Hecate shows up is very much like, I am here to support you. I've got your back. Like, I'm kind of vibrating some go get them energies at you, but like, you got to take care of your own shit. I'm not gonna do it for you. You do the thing. It's like I said, I do believe in the just God. I do believe in justice. I do believe in harshness and severity. Sometimes people need to be taken down a peg so that they can put themselves back into right perspective. But you know, with Hecate, it's all like, are you really gonna go to the graveyard on this day at this time and feed the dead? And like, what is your commitment really to wanting something to happen to this person? And it is kind of like it's your own checks and balances, because it's kind of like, if I didn't actually think that this person, like what I was doing was righteous, would I waste my time driving all the way to the cemetery at 2 a.m. and feed ghost spread? I don't know. I'd like to think that I wouldn't if I thought it all the way through. And maybe that's a part of her lesson is like, yeah, I can do these things, but you have to really want it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that is another awesome thing that Jack taught us in the class is like, the gods want to take you seriously. And they want to see that you take them seriously. So I think commitment is a great way to describe like how to successfully work with her or any deity is like, you have to put in the time, you know, you have to put in some kind of effort, but that's like sincere and sustained. And yeah. But yeah, I'm not going to be getting angry dead people to do anything to me anytime soon. I thought about that spell and I was like, maybe if you go and you're just like really nice to them, you just talk to them and then you could ask them to do stuff. I mean, why wouldn't that work? It might.
I did use it, but only because you use it to collect the dirt to put into your spirit Kerberos later on. And that I thought is like, okay, if you're going to be restless dead anyway, like if you're going to be restless dead anyway, I might as well put you to like a good use. And this is just like protection, guard the home, not like, go get them, boys, go get my enemies.
You like, they're like the flying monkeys from The Wizard of Oz, and you're like, go.
I release thee.
Yeah, I feel like I have some pretty hardcore ancestors that, like the grandmother who played the rosary. I got a Reiki healing once, and it was the only time I had ever done it. And the woman said that an elderly woman chased her around the table.
Oh my goodness. Don't you touch my granddaughter. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, my ancestors are really the ones that taught me that. Maybe my Jewish ancestors more than my Catholic ones. So I remember, like, I don't remember what happened. Something happened that was very anti-Semitic in the world, as it does always. And my ancestors were like, why don't you curse that person? Why don't you throw things at the, fuck that person? I was like, whoa. I get, yes, you're right. Anti-Semitism is a big deal, but I'm not, no. Because also, one, taking down one anti-Semite is not going to solve anti-Semitism. I'm happy to direct my energy towards healing of that concept. But it was funny how intense they got, like, almost immediately. That, especially because normally they don't want me to do anything malefic. Like, if I ask, like, oh, I'm really angry at my stepdad. You know, and then they'll be like, no, no, practice forgiveness in the world. God's love above all things.
That's super interesting that you, like, I'm so intrigued by that open and clear communication that you have with your ancestors. Because I feel, while I feel like mine are present and involved, I don't always get, like, I don't think I've ever gotten, like, a clear message or channel. And, like, can you talk about how that works for you? Because I'm so interested.
Yeah, so I developed that in conjunction with my cards, so maybe I should, like, specify that. Although I do like, hear the sentences. It's taken me a while, and it takes, like, a meditation technique. Basically, all of my decks are consecrated for whoever they are meant to be channeling, so I've already got that going. So, like, ancestors have their own deck. And then whenever I am shuffling, I try to hold the Hebrew letter Mem, which is the letter that brings about prophecy. Or I think Vav also works because that's kind of like a connector, so you can connect between the spirit world and this. So with ancestors, I would say Vav is a good one to meditate on. So I just try to hold that, like, over the deck as I'm shuffling. And then when I pull, I just kind of, I have to actually open my mouth and say it, but it just kind of then comes out, if that makes sense. Like, I don't always know what I'm about to say before I open my mouth, but if I do the setup correctly, like, use the right deck and do my visualizations, it will generally just come out. So, or sometimes it will just be really obvious, like, I want to say, what did they, I don't remember what they gave me that said, oh, curse these people, but it was like tower, death card, or something that was just very obvious. And then, like, maybe it was the devil combined with the Magus card, which is just, like, really on the nose, you know? But yeah, like, there's this knowing that you have in your head, which is, you're already talking about, is that unclear channel. It's just that knowing. It's like you just, you don't have words for it, but you just have a knowing in your heart. And then it just depends where you develop it, like, in what direction you develop that. Where, like, Jack Rale will talk about using the Straphalos and then just letting whatever visions come into your head. Sasha Ravitch was actually talking about this in our last Saturn Vox episode, which I do think is accurate, is that spirits don't normally like to talk in words, although I found that ancestors in particular are more usual to say full sentences. So, like, yeah, the channel is, the sentences are more complete when I'm talking to my ancestors, but sometimes it will just be an image, and then you just have to open your mouth and kind of just let go. It's like this really, the moment of the fool, you just have to let go and let God and let it just come out. It's being Catholic helped, all my childhood helped, because I do have blind faith beat into my skull. And so I can just have blind faith that if I let go, it will work. And yeah, I would say that it does. I mean, you know, in the instance, they'll always tell me the same things over and over again, like even if I ask later. So that's usually one of my tells that I'm not just making this up, because obviously that's something I think all diviners get nervous about.
Totally. Yeah. Thank you for explaining that, because I think there's an important aspect of like ritual combined with meditation. And then, of course, like the trust factor. I've done some channeling after doing like LBRP stuff and like working to invoke an angel and then like having a conversation. Like sometimes I'll do it with another magician and I'll try to get in the zone. And after we do a working with whatever, a specific angel, and then they'll prompt me and ask questions. But it is like always, you know. So I think that I have come up with a method, but I have not channeled ancestors before, because I was told by someone who is a really good channeler to try to work with your highest guides first and then work your way down to the dead, just because it's so much more specific. Probably like harder to trust the information, because it's like angels, I feel like, speak in generalities and metaphors a lot, at least in my experience.
I mean, they're not this dimensional beings. So when I try to work with the Angelos, there's a lot more riddle game. Like the words will come out of order, almost, is like a good way to explain it.
Yeah, they speak in a lot of images to me now that I think about it. It's like, I see this, or like, they're saying it's like this, or, so that's interesting. But yeah, songwriting is like that, honestly. I feel like half the time I don't know who's writing the song, because it's just like coming out of me. I feel like that's the same energy link as channeling spirits. So maybe I could write a song from the point of view of an ancestor. Maybe that would be an interesting way to channel.
I love that. I know, yeah. I mean, because that's kind of what me and Cooper were talking about in our poetry and necromancy discussion. In song work, it's almost, to me, singing is praying twice or something. I mean, poetry is amazing, but when you put that to music, it takes a whole nother level. And I do, I think if you were to set an intention, make a space, do whatever smells and sounds make you feel like you're in a holy environment, and then set the intent, like, I'm writing for or about, you know, state the name. And if you could even, like, say, born here, die here, that would probably be really good too. And then just let it flow. Just like I said that I was doing with the cards, just let go. Quit grasping. That's the hard part, getting the ego to stop grasping. And it's like, it happens internally, and you can kind of think about it as a physical image of like a hand letting go of its grasp. And you can even visualize it that way, as you can visualize some like invisible hand just gripping your heart. That's your ego. And if you can just get it to just like let go and hold the heart in its palm instead of clutching in a fist, that's the balance between ego and others. Like, that's the balance between selfhood and God's expression of like multitude love. And so if you can do that, then the channeling kind of just, I mean, that's the goal, like to have a clear, open channel. But even just working at it, even just setting the intention, facilitates that opening. And calling on something with someone like Hecate or the Virgin Mary, who do work as psychopomps, invoking them at the beginning of the session, that would also help guide the ancestor into the space.
That is such a good suggestion, especially like thinking back to the dream that I told you about.
Well, choirs of angels, she was leading them, and it was about your ancestors.
Whoa, we cracked the code.
That was my first thought, because, oh, I'm going to forget the song, but it's, you know, choirs of angels sing, glory to the newborn king.
Yep. Wow.
I love your cat's face. I'm just staring at your cat's little grouchy face.
I know. It's so, he looks so stern, but there are some hairless cats that just look angry. Have you seen them on Instagram? They're like.
Yes. I'm obsessed with watching them. Instagram algorithm knows I like hairless cats.
Yeah. My mom was like 3 years ago. She was like, you should make an account for him. And I was like, no. I probably would be like rich and famous if I had jumped on the Sphinx trend before then. We'd be living a life of luxury, my boy.
Oh well. What? Okay, this is the thing I'm thinking, is Sphinxes as the Dark Mother. Sphinxes as this, there's something pure and regal and like liminal about them, but then kind of also like angry and vicious and maybe pouty and a little bit ugly, even though the ugliness is what makes them so great.
Yeah, they are definitely, according to like vets and vet techs and people who like love Sphinx or cats, they really are like kind of primal. Like they have this like way more like I'm gonna hunt you kind of thing than normal cats. Yeah, and also very nocturnal. Like this guy woke me up like 4 or 5 times in the middle of the night because he would keep hearing birds and just like get up and be like, the fuck's going on out there? And I also think cats are just like such good spiritual protectors. Like I don't have ghosts, you know, because he's here. He just watches out. Like he doesn't like it when I'm out of the house too much. He's sort of like, I think of him as Giles from Buffy or like Luna from Sailor Moon, you know?
Just okay. Kind of like, yes.
He's happier when I'm on top of my shit.
It's like my goth girl's shame is that I have never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, wow. You should watch it. It's really good. And then you've seen Sailor Moon, right?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm more of a weeb than a goth, apparently. I've been outed.
Oh, that's okay. I love anime. But when you watch Buffy, you're going to be like, oh my God, they stole everything from Sailor Moon. Like, it's like the same plot.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah. So you watched the original, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I lived in Japan for a little while, and I was just so lucky enough that they do like pop-up museum exhibits, and they just happened to be doing the Sailor Moon like 80th anniversary or something. And so they had all this like old stuff from, I'm going to blank on her name, but the creator's, like, old notes. Wow. And, like, they made a replica of her desk and, like, what her desk looked like with, like, all the different stuff on it. And you could, like, look through. And so, like, she even saved those notes, kind of blows my mind. But, like, original designs of them.
That's amazing. I also used to live in Japan. And so I know what? How fucking awesome that exhibit was. Because no one half-asses anything in the art world there.
Yeah, they do those weird little pop-up bits, and it's like the coolest thing. They have like a themed restaurant, like, come eat your moon power prism burger. I'm like, who needs this? Me, apparently.
All the specialty, everything. It's so good.
What were you doing there? What did you do there?
Well, my mom worked for the Foreign Service. So I lived there for 3 years, 7th grade through 9th grade.
Wow. I didn't realize you traveled so much.
Yeah, I lived, until I was like 16, I lived more outside of the US than inside. So I've lived in Finland, Russia, Mexico, Brunei, Australia, and Japan.
Oh, amazing. But also maybe really stressful for a kid under the age of 16.
Yeah, it's definitely, I feel like you either love it or you don't. Like I felt like after 2 or 3 years, I was done. I was kind of like bullied a lot growing up, so it was nice to like start over all the time. But my little sister definitely like wanted to be rooted. And she got to be like basically from 14 onward, and then she hated it. She was like, this sucks, you know? So.
Yeah. So I wonder, like, since Hecate and Mary do kind of have this, like, protecting of outcasts, protection of, like, people who are kind of marginalized, liminal, don't really feel like they fully are embodied into any one community. If being transient so much as a child kind of played into you just naturally having more of an affinity for these liminal spirits.
That's, I've thought of that before, like the liminality and feeling like liminal, but never weirdly like thinking, I mean, they have this expression called third culture kid or right, whatever. And that's like for people who grow up in different cultures outside of their own. So they don't belong to like their home culture or the outside culture. It's like some third mishmash culture. And then, of course, like my family comes from the American borderlands and, you know, where Mexico, like Mexico turned into Texas. And it's like unclear, like, you know, my dad's family's been in Texas for three generations. And people are like, do you come from Mexico? And it's like, well, yeah, we do. It just like wasn't it was not Texas. And then to just like, I think growing up in a household that had unsolved relational trauma and just feeling like kind of alone and outside of my family. There's so many ways that I feel, this is going to sound so bad, but like alone, not like in a sad way, because I also thank God have this like unshakable sense of huge spiritual support from like not only Mary and all the saints that I've cultivated relationships with, but like my ancestors, angels, God the Father, like possibly beings that I don't know nothing about. I just can have like that as a like a solid rock. And so I've learned, especially as I've gotten through my Saturn return, to like be at peace with being alone. And to not feel like it's a part of my identity in a bad way. It's more like I can go between worlds. And as an artist, that's what you do all the time too, is like you make art that like appeals to people, all kinds of people. And when people look at your work, it's like they're bringing whatever they're bringing to it and it like meshes with yours and creates like a third thing. It's like, I don't know.
Alchemy.
Yes, that's exactly the right word for it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you've touched on something there. There's something deeply Saturnal to the Virgin Mary, I would argue. And I know that there's, like, controversy about whether Saturn should actually fit with Binah on the Tree of Life. But, like, to me, the Virgin Mary and Binah are very similar. And Binah and Saturn are very similar. And Hecate is a Saturnal deity. And there's this idea that, like, suffering is implicitly necessary sometimes in life. Or sometimes to achieve the level of greatness and humility that, you know, comes with really devoting yourself to deity or to spirit, it involves being alone. Like, it involves having to kind of distance yourself from the human experience in a way, because the deeper you go into it, I mean, sure, like you maybe, like, you know, you and me both, there was isolation in the childhood, but at least for me, like, it's almost become this like I'm also in my Saturn return right now, so it's like willingly choosing isolation because whatever it was that I wanted to go do actually wasn't healthy, or like those relationships actually aren't serving me. And if it does get in the way of me praying every day, which is a large part of my practice, then like it's not meant for me. Like if that friend can't understand that at 8 p.m. every day I pray, then like they don't need to be my friend. Even if that makes me sad or lonely, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I think too, like, so much of how I go through life and like thinking about fate and free will all the time is like my deepest concern and wish, like as a human on this planet, is to just honor my ancestors with my life and honor God in the best way that I can by just showing up like ready to do whatever is asked of me, or be like show grace in any given hard situation. And so I think like, yeah, that's, I think that that is like a Saturnian kind of thing. It's because it's like, you're always paying attention to like your role in the divine order and how you show up for that in a like a big earth sign kind of way. Like, yeah, I'm like here the fuck I am, ready to be the best that I have to offer. But also too, it's like in service to what? It's like that's the other, like that's the flip, like Capricorn Cancer. It's like, how will you then take all of that work that you've done on yourself and turn it around to help others?
You know what's interesting about that is Hecate is both Saturnal and Lunar. Oh, I love this. Yes, she is the Capricorn, Cancer, and Axis. I love that.
That's so good.
Well, all right. This was amazing, Ramona. I enjoyed every minute of this conversation.
Me too. So much. Thank you so much for asking me on the show. I feel like I had so many epiphanies, like, just in the last hour or so.
Yay. Me too. And you know what? That's what this is. It's for the speakers. It's for the listeners. It's for community at large.
Yeah. Amen.
It's the Cancer Capricorn axis.
Yay, we love it. All my shit is in fourth house Cancer or Capricorn. Like,
oh wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. I got three planets what? There.
Fourth or ninth? Is ninth your other one?
Yeah, I'm Libra rising, so my houses are flipped. So I've got like three outer planets in Capricorn in the fourth house. And then in Cancer, I've got Jupiter and Chiron and my midheaven.
Oh wow, but that's not terrible. Your music will do really well. It'll be hard for you to emotionally process, but once you do get through your emotional wounds, ooh, I'm getting the chills. That's why your music is so much about emotional healing as well, I bet. Because it's like as you heal, then career-wise, you can help others heal.
Holy shit. Okay. Wow. I don't need like I'm like that is a gift you just gave me.
Yeah. No, Chiron, you should listen to a Moon Matters episode on Chiron. That's how I am. I'm using her episode to delineate your Chiron.
Wow, that's cool. Damn. Yeah, it's all in the 10th house too. Shit.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, no matter what career is happening, if you have Jupiter in the 10th, it's like, yeah, all eyes on you. But then this like healing of yourself. Then, like, the wounded healer, Chiron, he heals himself first, and then he turns around and heals others. So that's obviously a part of your career path, which is the art and the music.
Wow. Yeah, and my north node is in Aquarius in the fifth house, which is...
Ooh, creativity! Unique and Saturnal methods of creativity.
Totally, and also, like, for the collective, right? Or, like, a sort of... Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely more of like I'm looking at the entire tapestry instead of like, and I see how all the threads are together. Like we are all one unit.
Yeah, wow. Awesome.
Yay. Well, I'm excited for you.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Oh, so I mean, I'm going to put all these in the show notes, but like everybody definitely check out Ramona's deck, Visions of Mary. It's the... Kickstarter's already been funded, so is it just something people can still donate to? Or?
Well, the best way to support the deck is to join my Patreon, which is at patreon.com/RamonaMartinez. And the deck, it's going to be 40 cards. I have 13 done. I was hoping to do two a month, but they're becoming increasingly more elaborate, so I'm kind of getting them done at one a month at this rate. So it might be like not till 2023 that this deck comes out, which I'm like, I feel like I'm apologizing for, but decks take time, people.
Oh, yeah. So,
yeah, we're doing our best with that. But yeah, Visions of Mary on Instagram, all one word, is how you can follow the art and see a new card every month. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh, wait. And if you want to just check out like my art page, and I also have posted my music there and saint devotion stuff that I do. That's at @by_by Ramona, Ramona underscore Martinez. Oh, did the cat turn off my mic? No, thank God.
He's really like, Mom, get off the computer.
Yeah.
Get off done. Of it.
He's like, where's my dinner?
All right. Well, with that being said, the cat has announced the end of our interview.